What does it take to dismantle an entire system built on racial hatred? South Africa's transformation from apartheid state to democracy represents one of history's most astonishing political miracles. This isn't just a story about laws changing or leaders negotiating. It's about millions of ordinary people who refuse to accept that their humanity could be legislated away. From the moment Dutch ships anchored at the Cape in 1652 to Nelson Mandela's inauguration in 1994, South Africa's journey spans centuries of oppression, resistance, and ultimately reconciliation. Understanding this journey means grappling with uncomfortable truths: how systematic racial engineering became state policy, how economic interests fueled segregation, and how a nation learned, is still learning, to heal from wounds that run generations deep. Long before apartheid had a name, its architecture was being constructed. When the Dutch East India Company established a trading post at the Cape in 1652, it evolved into a settler colony that systematically dispossessed indigenous peoples through violence and disease. British takeover in 1806 brought new complications. Slavery ended in 1834, but new control mechanisms quickly replaced old ones. Then came the game changer: diamonds in 1867, gold in 1886. South Africa became a treasure trove demanding cheap labor. Mining magnates like Cecil Rhodes engineered social systems to extract both minerals and humanity. The 1894 Glen Grey Act imposed taxes forcing Africans into wage labor. Past laws restricted movement. Labor compounds became laboratories for racial control, perfecting surveillance and segregation techniques that would later spread throughout society. The Anglo-Boer War, 1899 to 1902, sealed the deal. When Britain unified South Africa in 1910, it was only for whites. The 1913 Natives Land Act restricted black land ownership to just 7%. Millions lost their ancestral land overnight. The segregation state took shape. The 1923 Urban Areas Act created separate locations. The 1936 Representation of Natives Act removed the last black voters. Mining companies shaped these policies, guaranteeing cheap labor while preventing permanent black urbanization. Workers were fingerprinted, medically examined, and constantly surveilled. Social engineering at industrial scale. Yet resistance emerged everywhere. The African National Congress, founded in 1912, initially pursued constitutional methods. Women led anti-pass campaigns and rent boycotts. The 1929 Beer Hall protests and 1930s Alexandra bus boycotts showed growing militancy. When the National Party won in 1948, segregation transformed into comprehensive ideology. The 1949 Prohibition of Mixed Marriages Act and 1950 Immorality Act criminalized interracial relationships. The Population Registration Act classified everyone into rigid racial categories: white, colored, Indian, native, with classification determining where you lived and whom you could love. The Group Areas Act forced 3.5 million people from their homes. Entire communities like District 6 and Sophiatown were bulldozed. The Bantu Education Act designed curricula to prepare black students for subordinate roles. Minister Hendrik Verwoerd stated bluntly, "There is no place for the Bantu in the European community above the level of certain forms of labor." Past laws became instruments of daily terror. Between 1948 and 1973, over 10 million people were arrested for pass violations, arrested for existing in the wrong place. The Suppression of Communism Act defined communism so broadly that virtually any opposition became criminal. Bantustans, supposedly independent homelands comprising just 13% of South Africa's land, attempted to denationalize the majority population. Resistance intensified. The 1952 Defiance Campaign violated segregation laws. On August 9, 1956, 20,000 women marched on Pretoria against pass laws. But on March 21, 1960, police opened fire on peaceful protesters in Sharpeville, killing 69 people. The massacre ended peaceful resistance. The migrant labor system created catastrophic social costs. Men separated from families for years, children growing up without fathers, townships suffering severe overcrowding and social breakdown. Apartheid's fatal paradox emerged in the 1960s. 6% annual GDP growth demanded skilled labor that white workers alone couldn't provide. Black workers increasingly filled positions previously reserved for whites, creating new possibilities for organized resistance. Internationally, South Africa faced growing isolation. The 1960 Sharpeville massacre sparked sanctions campaigns. Portuguese colonialism's 1974 collapse in Angola and Mozambique removed buffer states. The 1973 oil crisis ended the boom, exposing structural weaknesses. Then came June 16, 1976. Thousands of Soweto schoolchildren marched to protest Afrikaans instruction. Police opened fire, killing 13-year-old Hector Peterson, among others, igniting nationwide resistance. Over 600 died as the uprising spread. Young activists, influenced by Steve Biko's Black Consciousness Movement, rejected their parents' perceived accommodation, emphasizing psychological liberation from internalized racism as prerequisite for political freedom. Though Biko died from police torture in September 1977, his ideas profoundly influenced a generation. The United Democratic Front, 1983, united hundreds of organizations. The Congress of South African Trade Unions mobilized the growing black industrial workforce. By 1984, township resistance evolved into sustained insurrection with street committees and people's courts creating alternative governance. Prime Minister P.W. Botha responded with total strategy, intensified repression combined with limited reforms. His 1983 tricameral constitution created separate parliamentary chambers for colored and Indian representatives while excluding the black majority, only intensifying resistance. International pressure mounted. The UN arms embargo became mandatory in 1977. When major banks refused to roll over loans, severe financial crisis followed. By 1986, South Africa had reached a mutually hurting stalemate. Neither government nor liberation movements could win outright. When F.W. de Klerk replaced P.W. Botha in 1989, few expected change. Yet on February 2, 1990, he stunned the world by unbanning the ANC, PAC, and Communist Party, announcing Nelson Mandela's unconditional release. Mandela walked free on February 11 after 27 years imprisoned, his dignified bearing and immediate call for reconciliation establishing crucial moral authority. The Convention for a Democratic South Africa began in December 1991, bringing together 19 political organizations amid ongoing violence. The June 1992 Boyapatong massacre and Chris Hani's April 1993 assassination nearly derailed everything, averted partly by Mandela's televised appeal for calm. The National Party proposed power sharing with minority vetoes. The ANC insisted on majority rule with protections. Compromises emerged: a 5-year government of national unity, strengthened regional powers, constitutional property rights. On April 27, 1994, South Africans voted in euphoric atmosphere. The ANC won 62.6%. On May 10, Nelson Mandela became South Africa's first democratically elected president, declaring, "Never, never, and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another." The peaceful transition defied predictions, demonstrating that even entrenched oppression could be dismantled through negotiation and shared humanity. South Africa chose an innovative path. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission, established in 1995 under Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Unlike Nuremberg trials or blanket amnesties, the TRC prioritized truth-telling with conditional amnesty. Perpetrators who fully disclosed politically motivated actions could avoid prosecution. Over 2 years from April 1996, the commission heard testimony from 21,000 victims, with 2,000 appearing publicly in televised proceedings. These testimonies revealed apartheid's brutality, torture techniques, assassination operations, chemical warfare programs. Former police colonel Eugene de Kock provided extensive testimony about state-sponsored death squads. Liberation movements also faced scrutiny. The ANC acknowledged abuses in training camps, and the commission investigated necklacing and other violence within Black communities. This even-handedness enhanced credibility, though some criticized it for creating false moral equivalence. The October 1998 report found the apartheid state was the primary perpetrator while also criticizing liberation movements. It recommended reparations and a corporate wealth tax, though implementation remained limited. Many perpetrators never applied for amnesty, and structural violence received less attention. Nevertheless, the commission created an undeniable authoritative record, demonstrating the possibility of addressing historical trauma through truth-telling rather than vengeance. Over 25 years after democracy's birth, South Africa presents a paradox. Six successful elections and robust institutions, independent judiciary, free press, competitive elections, demonstrate democratic durability. Yet, economic transformation lags dramatically. While a Black middle class emerged, South Africa ranks among the world's most unequal societies. Unemployment hovers around 30%, reaching 50% among youth. Approximately 55% live below the poverty line, poverty remaining heavily racialized. Land reform proves particularly contentious. Despite constitutional provisions, less than 10% of commercial agricultural land transferred to Black ownership by 2020, fueling calls for expropriation without compensation. Corruption under Jacob Zuma's presidency, 2009 to 2018, posed existential threats. State capture, where private interests systematically hijacked state decision-making, hollowed out institutions and diverted billions from public services. President Cyril Ramaphosa's anti-corruption efforts show uneven progress. Yet strengths endure. A diversified economy, sophisticated financial sector, vibrant civil society, and an independent constitutional court protecting fundamental rights. Most remarkably, South Africa avoided predicted ethnic conflict. While racial tensions persist, commitment to non-racialism holds. Mandela's Rainbow Nation remains aspirational, reflecting ongoing engagement with founding principles. The revolution now confronts its greatest challenge, fulfilling democracy's economic and social promises while preserving hard-won political freedoms.